cliffcentral.com.
Right, welcome to the Renegade Report. This is our last show for the year, so if you're listening, thanks for listening. And Ramon?
Well, I don't know if they will be happy that it's our last show, but yes, don't worry, we'll be back. Not bad, eh? We started with six to prove a point, and we've done, how many have we done?
30, close 40? On 40, yeah, right. Close on 40. So not too bad. Prof Maguve had the podcast in Braille, he would definitely enjoy it, I think. Don't you?
If that would be possible, indeed. But anyway, if you thought 2016 was bad, just wait till next year.
Yeah, 2017's just waiting for you. It's got a gimp mask. It's just, it's ready to go.
And always remember, it's not the year that sucks. It's just you.
Basically. So on that note.
On that high note.
We will be back in early January, but let's get to this show. We thought it only reasonable to bring a little known radio presenter. You know, we like to give little guys opportunities on this show. This guy isn't well known, but Gareth Cliff is joining us today.
Right. Apparently he's a DJ. That's someone who can't write music, is it?
Yeah. Well, his book says he's a shock jock.
A shock jock.
This is the worst introduction I've ever received for anything in my life.
Welcome, Gareth.
I don't even know why I agreed to it.
At least we're not like blowing smoke up your ass, which, you know, is the usual introduction, no. Is it not?
No, I mean, you'd probably have it the other way around, that I should be blowing smoke up your ass because you guys have got so many downloads every month. Well done.
Oh, thank you.
Well done. The listeners of the Renegade Report really do love the Renegade Report. All right, go on. Yeah. What do you want to know?
Right, so Gareth, how are you doing otherwise in the final few weeks of 2016?
It's been a big year for the world. I mean, everything has changed. Everything.
Yes.
There are some fundamental political and ideological cracks and fissures developing. And I think a lot of the wisdom that was has been discredited. The people who we thought we could trust in media are no longer the people who we can go to for sensible analysis and opinion, because they've all been proven to be completely discredited. And we live in a world now of partly a world of crazy ideology, which has no basis in fact, and then also a world of science trying to assert itself in a sea of feelings, which is madness.
But you must be extremely depressed that your favorite ever president will no longer be. Barry is leaving the White House.
I don't know why you two have such an issue with this guy. On the basis of numbers, he's done a terrific job.
In terms of bombings, I agree.
No, I'm talking about the economy. I mean, he's handing over an economy to Donald Trump now that it is Donald Trump's to mess up.
He didn't do anything to them. What has he done for the economy?
Excuse me.
He increased taxes.
Unemployment is right down.
Unemployment in Venezuela is 8.4%. So, you know, I mean, that's fantastic numbers.
It's lower in America.
In North Korea, it's 2% unemployment.
That's because you can tell people to do something when you need them to do it, and they have to do it.
But all he's done is increase part-time employment, so there's more people working at McDonald's.
Why are you nitpicking? You won't give this guy any leeway here. You won't give him a scrap of credit. I will acknowledge that his only real faux pas was throwing his weight behind Hillary Clinton in this election, which cost him a huge amount of credibility and
moral high ground.
And he messed
up on terrorism.
Listen, terrorism, who's going to get it right? Do you think Donald will?
No.
Because terrorism is an amorphous, complicated thing. It's not cut and dried and easy to understand.
But as someone who likes free
speech...
It doesn't
operate like a state.
But as someone who likes free speech, Gareth, surely you have a problem with him...
Assange.
...him jailing whistleblowers far more than any other previous administration combined.
I do, and I think it also bears some saying that the guy has not completely delivered on his promises to pull out of the Middle East, to stop drone warfare, to... clear out Guantanamo Bay. There are a lot of things that he couldn't do or that he didn't want to do. And I'm not going to say I've said this 1,000 times in my show. There is no such thing as this perfect godlike father figure that we can all expect to lead us in perfect song, in chorus, every step of the way.
Isn't that though why guys like us and other people have an issue with Obama, it's not because he's necessarily done everything right or everything wrong. It's just because the media has treated him like he has done everything right. So, and you can compare, there are comparisons of, for example, Bush and...
But then your anger is misplaced. It should be directed at that media.
Oh, we're not angry.
No, but I mean, your disappointment at least. The fact that you've got an axe to grind is with CNN and with MSNBC and with the Huffington Post and with all these publications.
Just say fake news.
Sure, because these guys have been partisan from the get-go.
Yeah. Well, they paid on one side. So, I mean, the economy is one argument.
I mean, they gave him the Nobel Prize before he'd done anything, which is another example of how ridiculous.
Well, they gave him a Nobel Prize for de-escalating, or saying he wanted to de-escalate nuclear weapons, and then not actually doing that.
Doing nothing like it.
But it's the economy, for example, he's increased the deficit. So it's very easy to make your economy much better when you just keep spending money.
Every president since Reagan has increased the deficit.
I think Clinton actually brought it down, if I'm not mistaken.
Clinton did hand over some kind of a surplus in terms of tax, but I don't think he did in terms of the deficit. I think it pretty much stayed where it was, if not got worse.
So a question for you. Why do you think people care deeply about presidents and state leaders? Okay, yes, they hold important positions, but why do you think people have this almost like innate feeling that this president needs to be one of us and needs to look after us? It's a bit odd.
I think there's an instinctive, primitive need for a chief. And it comes from the days where the alpha male, usually, would be the one who surveyed the territory and assessed it for danger and led the tribe to fruit trees and hunting grounds and would impregnate the women first and that kind of thing. It comes from a very basic and primal place. I assume, I'm not an evolutionary psychologist, but I would assume that's where it comes from. For a lot of people, it's still the way that we operate. For many people, it's still the way they want to operate. It's the safety and security of knowing there's going to be someone looking out for me. It's the same reason religion continues to persist. And people who are smarter than me, like Sam Harris, have found that there are very good reasons for religion to have originated and for religion to have sustained itself as long as it has. And part of that is this inbuilt desire and need among normal, semi-sentient, upstanding primates to have something to look up to have something to aspire to, and also something who they can trust in to look after them. It's an abdication of personal responsibility in some way.
Yeah, I mean, Bill Burr had a great piece where he said, you know, Obama wasn't that great. I mean, he's been here for 8 years. I mean, how many times has he called you? Like, when did he make you a sandwich? Ever. Never. Crap president. When did he call you? Nothing.
All right. But you guys, you're completely unemotional and unmoved by the fact that this guy has been an inspiring, a tremendously good communicator, a leader of against really some very tough odds. The Republicans have given him not a single space to move in. Every time he's tried to do anything, whether it was Obamacare, whether it was the bailout, he had just resistance and obfuscation from them at every step. You have to acknowledge that there hasn't ever been a president who just played the media better, even if the media were partisan from the beginning. Mm. There's never been a guy who's been able to show such versatility in office in terms of his ability to speak to young, old, poor, rich, white, black. He really has symbolized...
As long as they live on the East or West Coast, because what he's done is he's made the Democrat Party, and this is what no one's picking up from the election, but what he really has done in his presidency is he's turned the Democrats from a party across the entire country to a party of the East and West elites. And that's where you could have accused
George W. Bush and Karl Rove of doing the same to the Republican Party in reverse, where they turned it into a party of hicks in Arkansas and Kansas and Tennessee, and they took it out of the East and West Coast. There used to be a lot of very sensible, moderate Republicans, people who believed in smaller government, people who were...
Well, George Bush was part of that group, because George Bush was part of the... And the people he surrounded himself with were part of that neocon group from the 60s.
Yeah, but what they did is they then moved into the territory of the evangelical Christians and the Tea Party and that lunatic asylum, and it did for the Republican Party what you're accusing Barack Obama of doing to the Democrats.
Except the you know, I think I give people, individuals, more credit than the media gives them, which is that to say that the Democrats have lost things you won't read in the mainstream media, but they've lost a lot of gubernatorial races. They've lost a lot of sort of state senates, state houses, etc., which are unheard of in Democratic states. So states that vote blue.
Listen, in the end, the legacy of Obama is going to be horribly tarnished by the results of this last election. And he did throw in with Hillary. He has lost the House, the Senate, which were already in Republican hands. But now the Supreme Court is totally within Donald's ambit. He can appoint three new justices at a minimum in his next 4 years, which means that the entire Supreme Court could be very much weighted to the conservative side by the end of his first term. If he goes for another term or not, that's another debate. But essentially, every aspect of government, and you mentioned the gubernatorial races too, so you've got governors in different states who are also Republicans now. This is a perfect setup. If Donald can't achieve things, he can blame no one but himself.
Oh, absolutely. And he won't achieve certain things because we know the problems with Donald. But wait, before we get to Donald, what is the big problem with, say, the Supreme Court going a little bit more conservative? What is the big deal about Justice Scalia dies? If you're not basically working for CNN, you would acknowledge that he was a superb justice on that court.
Well, he was, but he also had this idea of his own moral righteousness, which is always a problem I have with conservatives, is that they tend, the basic premise is that conservatives tend to prefer order and leftists prefer anarchy. This is generally the rule, right? And here, and I'm not talking about anarchism, but anarchy.
Yeah, chaos. They want chaos.
Yeah, chaos.
In a chaos
sense. So let's say that Antonin Scalia had certain moral imperatives that he believed, for example, in the sanctity of life, or he believed that gay marriage was wrong, or any of these things. That, to me, is problematic, and I don't use that word lightly, in a 21st century where really we have to live and let live. I'm not saying we have to build transgender bathrooms all over South Africa or all over America, but there needs to be an acceptance that certain people are just not in the norm category. They're in the weird category. They're in the wacky category. They do their thing. They wear a dress. They were once a decathlete at the Olympics, and now suddenly they're a very, very ugly woman. All of this is possible in the 21st century. And Antonin Scalia came from a time and place where very little was possible except that rigid idea of a perfect model family and going to church on a Sunday. And a lot of stuff I don't think you would agree with either. I don't think you would have actually got along with him. He was a grumpy, angry, slightly old school traditionalist, you could say, sexist, backward.
I think on a personal level, I 100% agree with you. But for example, the flag burning issue that was raised recently by Trump, who was completely wrong on that, wants to sort of jail people who burn a flag.
Yeah.
As it happens, the Supreme Court ruling on that was for flag burning, and the deciding sort of vote or the deciding ruling came from Scalia, who voted against his fellow conservatives that, yes, he doesn't agree with it and he thinks it's wrong.
Well, don't we want independent thinkers? In that case, in this example, he's a good example. There are probably many other cases where you could cite him as a bad example. But the point is that on the Supreme Court, I actually think it would be favorable for America if they didn't have partisan appointments. If the appointment was on the basis that that judge is just a sterling judge, on the basis that this is someone who really knows the law well. And there are good people in the Supreme Court. I don't know it as well as I did when... who was the previous Chief Justice Rehnquist?
Yeah.
When he was on, I knew who all the judges were. I've sort of stopped paying attention because I've lost interest. And a lot of the big stuff is already decided law. A lot of the big things are already there. I think they'd have a huge difficulty rolling back things like Roe v. Wade. I think many women in America feel that their right to do with their bodies what they will is now an established right. It doesn't need to be considered again by a bunch of Christian moralists. I don't want those people deciding on behalf of me or anyone else what we should do with our bodies. And I think things like gay marriage, we've moved on. It's a victory. Let's count it in the list of things that are no longer issues we need to get hot under the collar about. In a civilized Western democracy like America, certain stuff you can now say is accepted.
Well, it was, excuse me, it was civilized until 3 weeks ago. Was it? No, a month ago, when Mr. Trump became the president-elect. And he's actually the one that's going to bring the Republicans into the more modern age without the Christian evangelicals. Because, A, yeah. he
it's probably agnostic.
He's definitely.
He's a third-party candidate running as a Republican.
I mean, I think Obama was probably the first atheist president.
Oh, yeah,
although he'd never admit it.
He attended Jeffrey Wright.
I've attended baptisms and I've attended funerals. It doesn't suddenly make me a Christian.
Obama wasn't a Muslim.
I'm not peddling that nonsense. Yeah. But I'm saying, would it be worse if he came out and said that he actually turns out, I was an atheist? Do you think it would be worse than being a Muslim for the American people?
We know that
they're freaked out at the possibility that he could be a Muslim.
They're on a par. We know that it would be harder for an atheist president to be elected than a gay president. I think a Muslim president would probably find favor in a large group on the left. I think there are also a couple of fundamentalist Christians who would prefer someone of the book than someone who doesn't believe in the book. So you'd have to, I mean, it's a highly improbable test case scenario. But
anything's possible
now. I do think Barack Obama is probably a non-believer. He's the first president to ever acknowledge non-believers in his inaugural speech, which was something we've never heard before. And I think Trump doesn't give two dams about what you believe in, what your fantasy world consists of. I don't think he cares. He's a thorough pragmatist.
And neither should the government, though.
No, they shouldn't. And I think Trump is going to probably surprise a lot of people because we already know that he was mostly a Democrat for most of his adult life.
Indeed.
And he parasite rode the Republican Party through this election. He tamed them because they were an unruly eight-headed beast with people like Michelle Bachmann and Sarah Palin and the Tea Party and whack jobs. And then you have Governor Christie, who's a little more moderate. You had people like Giuliani. It was a monster. And all he did was he rode roughshod over the lot of them. He destroyed most of the other people in the primaries. Now he's talking to them all again. He's thinking about having Romney in his cabinet. He's already appointed Ben Carson. This is going to be a very interesting time. And what you see about Trump that is immediately, to me, an optimistic sign, is that he is more pragmatic than ideological on almost every matter. If he gets smart people in a room and they educate him about an issue like, a trade deal with China, you'll suddenly see the guy start to warm to the idea that there is a benefit to him delegating that responsibility and not being a traditional politician about it and mouthing off in rhetoric and ideology and not having a practical solution. He wants practical solutions because he wants to be... The one thing you know for sure,
he wants
to make America great. No,
not
he
liked.
Really means it. He wants to make America great again. He means that.
Well, someone, Scott Adams, who writes Dilbert cartoons, he said he will be the first plumber president, so to speak. He'll be the first one to actually plug all the holes and fix the leaks and be like a real service, because he's not an ideologue. That's the key thing.
He doesn't care about ideology,
but
which is why he tripped up everybody who does.
Of course.
From the right to the left. He destroyed the Republicans in the primaries. He said, I don't care about your evangelical Christianity. He said to them, I don't care about your conservative or your liberal view on something. It's not important. He wants to make America great again. Then he turned his attention on Hillary and on the left, and he tore them apart. They had no argument to counter his, and he's the best persuader that has ever lived.
We forgot to mention, her name is Crooked Hillary on the show, and it will remain so until she goes to prison.
Have you seen all these pictures of her in shopping malls?
And they're all set up.
And hiking.
Well, the hiking one was definitely set up because the woman she took the photo with was a Democratic National Party like spokesperson or something. So pretending to be
not
hiking.
Not one of the ones she fired and then hired.
I don't know.
Hey, the Clinton Foundation donations have run dry since she lost. So
aren't
she
there
needs,
people asking for refunds?
I would assume so.
Well, in Saudi Arabia, maybe. Yeah. Qatar. I imagine, you know, they don't like giving millions of dollars and getting nothing in return.
Look, I don't know that Trump is going to be the answer to all these blue-collar workers in America's prayers. In fact, I can guarantee that he won't be. I think he's going to disappoint a lot of rural hick white people. Because they think, there's our chance to be in charge again. And that's how they see it. It's just, for them, it's purely, there's some kind of very primitive dialogue going on in their heads between It went too far to the one side. Now it's going to come back to the other side. And they suddenly think they'll be able to go around shooting each other at will and, you know,
that's
bringing back slavery. I don't think there are actually people like, look, it's a small minority. But yeah. I think that those people are the first to be disappointed, and they're going to wake up with a very bad hangover after it happens.
You need to, for a place like Michigan to turn around. And yes, it is. There's a lot of blue collar workers, but there's a lot of people working in banks there. Mm. And the reality is for a state that voted Mitt. Because he was their guy. But before they voted for Obama, they have gone blue several times. The reality is that I think identity politics played a much bigger role in all of this. And the left have learned nothing from this election. They're sticking down to you're a racist, misogynist, etc. I think that those guys, I don't think the average person, and let's just call it what it is, white person, because I think that's what's happened in America. I don't think the average white person wants to bring back slavery or any of that stuff. I don't even think they give a shit about being in charge.
Well, I mean, we've discussed this.
Where was the huge unhappiness? When Obama was elected, right? People were against Obama, right? Remember, that vote was also quite, not very close, but not as close as this one, but, well, this one's not close because Hillary won the popular vote by quite a margin. So the popular vote was much closer with the McCain-Obama originally. There were people who were against Obama, but there weren't protests in the street. There weren't graffiti painted all over the place. Mm. No one was particularly racist, as they imply America is all the time. People kind of accepted it. Even in the red states or whatever, they went, he's our president.
Right.
We're going to accept it. Now you've got the reverse scenario.
Well, the Republican Party didn't. They stood against him every step of the way.
Yeah, but politically, though. They didn't go out in the streets and
they did what was within their power. You know, block Obamacare because socialist healthcare doesn't work. But you know, there was no violence in the streets, which there has been this time around. It seems as if people on the streets of New York are unable to accept that Trump might be their president.
I think that
You were there.
But that's because Hillary built this powder keg and she was never able to detonate it and release the energy. So she's been hyping people up on this idea that you're about to elect an orangutan.
Literally Hitler.
Who is literally Hitler, who's going to bring back slavery, who hates women, who hates black people, who hates Mexicans. And all of that is untrue. But she hyped her people up to such a degree, because this is what the left has done, is they've chased everyone into identity politics territory. So now these people haven't had their come down yet. So they're still hyped up, and she can't defuse them because she didn't win. She was sure she was going to win. That would have defused the problem.
Mm.
Now she hasn't. They've got a problem, and it's not going to go away.
The best thing about a Donald Trump presidency for me is that the left will actually, if they oppose anything he does, they actually have to oppose it on principled grounds. And not on identity politics anymore. So when he said, you know, if you burn the flag, you should go to jail for a year, everyone's like, oh, this is outrageous. So they're actually protecting freedom of speech because Donald Trump said something against it. One of the best reasons for his presidency, other than anything else?
Look, to me, there are good and bad things that could come out of this. He's a bit of a loose cannon. We don't know what he's going to do. He's a very unpredictable character. That's not necessarily good in terms of stable markets, in terms of certainty, in terms of good international relations. You know, he could wake up one day and say, I hate North Korea, let's just bomb them. And he would. He would press the button. He wouldn't consult with anybody. There is also the opportunity here for us to reset things. For the first, and America's always wondered, what would a third-party candidate look like? Well, here's your chance to see.
Yeah.
You know, it was never going to be Ross Perot. Ross Perot. It was never going to be
Gary Johnson.
Gary Johnson. None of these guys have got a hope in hell. Trump is actually a third-party candidate. No political background. He's a showman. That's what he is. A lot of people say con artist. You could call him either. I don't think he'd be offended. I don't think he gets offended. I think he gets prickly with journalists. And interestingly enough, he doesn't pick on people, like small people. He picks on people at his level. So he'll go after a CNN anchor, or he'll go after Megyn Kelly, or he'll go after Rosie O'Donnell. He won't go after people who are ordinary citizens. They can throw things at him the whole time, and he doesn't react to it. He's very good at that. I think that's statesmanlike.
is anyone going to be at his level now? So because, you know, the way he's been described is he's a narcissist. That's why I said earlier that I think he wants to be liked. A lot of what he said, if you cut through the interpretation and the commentary on what he said, and you just listen to what he said, he keeps saying, we're going to work together, we're going to unite, we're going to... And yes, they are key words and they're everything that most politicians use, but he seems to be harping on it. He wants everyone to be friends. That's the sense I get from him. Why the hell would you go and even
Well, he sees the world very in a very binary fashion. He sees friends and enemies.
Okay, fine. But why...
Let's be friends.
But okay, but fair enough. But you could never imagine Barack Obama offering... I suppose he did to Hillary Clinton, but 4 years later. But him offering Mitt Romney the position of Secretary of State, which I think he probably will do in the end.
Right.
This is a guy who turned around and said Donald Trump is amoral. He's not representative of the Republican Party. He should not be our president. He's now 8 months after those comments, considering this guy as the third in charge, basically.
Well, this is the point about him being a pragmatist. He sees someone with good political credentials, someone who has an understanding of the system as it is, who may be able to help him tame the system to what he wants it to be. But he also sees not necessarily an opponent in him anymore, but a resource. And that's what's smart about a business person, is they don't care about ideology or they just want to make money. In this case, when he says he wants to make America great again, he means it. He genuinely is in this for ego. It's an open secret. There isn't anybody who goes, well, Donald Trump's not really egotistical. We all know that's what he is. That's the machine that has created the success that he's had in his life so far. And that's undeniable. I hear people saying, oh, but he's gone bankrupt once or twice. Some of the greatest people in business have had to go bankrupt once or twice to get to where they
are. But in America, being bankrupt is a way of life.
Well, that's it.
They make it so easy to be bankrupt and rebuild.
But besides that, he doesn't need fame. He's got fame. He doesn't need fortune. He's got fortune. He probably lives in a bigger house than the White House most days of the year anyway. In Mar-a-Lago, this place he lives, is a paradise. It's a paradise. He's married to this beautiful woman. He doesn't need anything. The only thing he needs is legacy. The only way he's going to get it is by honoring that promise to make America great again. So he's going to go around and he's going to find ways to maximize productivity and to get things working. That's all he needs. If he does that, he'll have done enough.
I would argue that only president of the United States who hasn't been an egotist in the last 30 years was George W. Bush. But
because he didn't even know where he was half the time.
He can't spell egotist.
But Barack Obama definitely cares about his ego, as did Bill Clinton. And the previous
But nothing
Bush.
On the level of Trump. I mean, no,
Trump is just honest about it.
No, I don't think... Listen, if Barack Obama looks... If you look back on his entire career as president, I think you will struggle. Even if you're a right-wing media acolyte, you will struggle to tear him apart at the level that we can tear apart almost every other president who came before him. They were also in love with JFK. What surfaced after that is this man who was riddled with health problems. He was deeply unfaithful. He had major problems. Major problems with the truth. I don't think you're going to find those things about Obama 50 years from now. They've dug deep. They've still not been able to dig out a rotten root anyway.
But that's why I don't like him.
I know, but then you've got to be honest about
it. He's not fun.
But then you've got to admit, of course he's fun. He's fun to watch. He did the late night talk shows better than anyone else.
He's a great celebrity.
It was more entertaining than it had ever been under
He's a great celebrity.
Sure.
Great
that's the reason why Trump's president. That's actually the original reason.
Fair
did
enough.
You watch that? Did you watch that? Was it 2012 where he mocked Donald Trump?
But you're giving me every other reason.
Yeah.
To not have to argue this point any further. You're admitting it's because you just don't like him. He's been too good at the public faces.
All right, enough of that. Enough of Barry and
yes.
Donald.
Yeah, I just want to throw this in quickly. I read this last night, and I thought it was quite telling. This is from Janie Allen, of all people. I don't know if you read that article.
Yes,
I haven't read it.
She likes our page on
In
Facebook.
Truth, it seems that anyone who disagrees with a liberal is risking character assassination. When you call someone a racist, sexist bigot because you happen to disagree with them, this is a bully tactic. And then she ends off by saying, and I just loved this because this is how I felt a lot of the time, and who knew I'd get this wisdom from her, of all people. She said, here it is, I long to have someone, anyone, ask me to debate or discuss my views. I happen to live in the bluest of states. And then she says this is probably the most important part, where she talks about how liberals don't have views, they have emotions and righteous anger, lots and lots of righteous anger. And we're experiencing that in this country too. People on the left don't argue on a basis of fact or of their views, even if they are ideological views that have no basis in fact. They argue about their emotions. It's about how you make me feel. It's about the feelings of people. They often will ascribe to themselves the ability to read the feelings of large groups of other people.
Oh, sure.
You know, the disabled. I speak on behalf of the disabled, but you have legs. Doesn't matter. I know how they feel. I can empathize with them. This has become some kind
of... You can be trans-disabled for the day.
And what they do then is they say that because you don't acknowledge feelings, because you want to have a sensible discussion about things, that you must be some kind of cold, calculating monster. Mm. And that's not true either. You just prefer to be rational about very practical things like healthcare, like government, like the tax system. These are just things that the left and right will never come to agree on because the left doesn't have a point of view on it.
All right, so talking about the left and right, let's bring it to South African context because we don't really have a right in South Africa.
No.
Not certainly, we've been described as everything on the right, but in general, if you go to a store and you want to buy a newspaper or a magazine or you want to turn on your radio and, you know, you want to listen to 24-hour programming that is either center even, I would argue, or center right, or even far right, if you happen to be on that wavelength, you're not going to find it.
You will find it in France. Isn't what's going on there is interesting because Hollande has just helped the ailing left to come back into the picture. All they have otherwise is the right and then the far right to choose from in their next election.
Sure.
And people think we've got problems.
Well, I think we do have problems. So we don't, because here's the thing is everyone's terrified France as an example of Marine Le Pen winning an election there or even getting a lot of votes and having power to some extent. But at least at some level, the conversation is happening, right? So, you know, in a democratic country, provided it remains democratic. So everyone, you know, Trump is literally Hitler and those examples. Oh, the Republicans have control of the House and the Senate and it's going to be chaos. Right. But really what will happen is they'll do stuff. And if they don't do stuff, they'll probably be voted out. Just like the Democrats have also run the House and the Senate together before. And they didn't do stuff probably. And that's why they lost it. So in South Africa, we're not having that conversation, though. So we don't have a right and a left conversation. It just doesn't happen, really. We've got, at best, a center conversation.
Well, you know, Socrates is famous for a lot of philosophical viewpoints, most of them which we regard very highly.
Yeah.
He was not a fan of democracy. And you know why? Because he didn't believe uneducated people should have a say about how governments are run. He said that's actually very dangerous. And he used the idea of a sweet shop owner and a doctor. And he said the mass of uneducated people will never vote for the doctor because he doesn't promise them sweets, even though the doctor knows better. This is the problem we have in South Africa. We have a huge number of uneducated people participating in a democracy. And I'm not going to judge because I'm not in a position to make the rules here. I'm not developing some utopian idea of how South Africa should be run. But you're absolutely right that we don't have a right. And people like me, who I think I really consider myself to be quite sensible and pragmatic about most things. I don't have an ideological viewpoint on things like abortion, gay marriage. You never get into those conversations in South Africa because it's kind of, you know, most people accept that it's unacceptable to be on the right on those things, and it's equally unnecessary to be on the left.
Well, I do think a lot of people are right-wing in the country.
But
it's a conservative country.
But they keep themselves quiet.
They're worried about jobs, food.
Yeah, that's
things
the problem.
Like that. They actually got real issues.
And so are a lot of people on the left who pretend to be on the left, but they're not really. They do it for the purposes of fitting in the workplace or for virtue signaling or for an ability to belong to some kind of clique or club that keeps them in position. And very often, I mean, that's the problem with the ANC too, is that you have a whole lot of people in the ANC who are really just looking for a handout. They're looking for a government job because they wouldn't get a job anywhere else. And if they can't hold on to that government job, they're out on the street.
Which is unfortunate because the ANC started off as a relatively, certainly as a governing party. They started off as a centrist party.
Absolutely. They've lost their way. But a lot of people have lost their way in the last while because they don't go back to basic principles. People don't ask themselves, do I have an ideological point of view on this? If I don't, do I have a practical point of view on this? If I don't, stay out of politics. Everybody wants to have a say. Everybody wants to have an opinion. And usually they want to have the most popular opinion. If they're going to have a voice, it better be left of center rather than right, because left is more socially acceptable. So you can say in the EFF outrageous things about land. Mm. And it's not going to get any... Nobody goes, oh my God, that's terrible. What an awful... They go, oh, well, it's part of the political discourse, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it's perfectly acceptable to talk about taking away people's hard-earned property. Or that they've worked for generations, or for at least their lives.
Or for killing whites, but not yet.
Yeah. I mean, you could say that, but God that forbid you should go on Facebook and say something about the beaches, and you'll end up being the pariah of the world for the entire duration of the year, regardless of the fact that you happen to be some lunatic who lives in a South Coast closed-off
hovel.
Nobody cares about your circumstances then. You must be inherently evil because you've expressed a point of view that's socially unacceptable for now.
So let's talk about freedom of speech. I know it's your favorite subject.
Mm.
I think we all know your views. You're quite ardent about it. You probably what you would call a fundamentalist freedom of speech advocate.
I don't like being called a fundamentalist anything.
Okay, so a very ardent freedom of speech advocate, except for maybe when the person's outside the factory with a burning torch.
Yeah.
Anything else goes.
Yeah, I don't want to see actual physical violence and destruction of property.
Sure. So, who is the biggest obstruction or obstacle to freedom of speech in South Africa today?
The ordinary man. Ordinary men and women who don't appreciate the rights that freedom of speech has bestowed on them already. The ordinary people who communicate via social media, who are using WhatsApp every day to share jokes, and don't fully appreciate that they're engaging with their basic rights when they do that, and aren't prepared to defend those rights when they come up in things like the hate speech bill, because they don't see a reason to get excited about the hate speech bill. They get excited about someone who says an outrageous thing on social media. They get excited about Julius, you know, whipping them up into a frenzy. Or they get excited about Musi Maimane when he says, let's ban certain kinds of speech, let's criminalize certain kinds of speech. They think that's something to be acceptable, to be supported.
Mm.
Now, that was where I took issue with Musi Maimane. That's where I've always had a problem with them. The DA are about as unprincipled a bunch of thugs as the EFF when it comes to the kind of proposed legislation they talk about.
Well, they're very reactive.
Thought crime. Well, of course, and they're opportunists. Look at how they pitched up at the court when this guy was shoved into the coffin. And the DA, what on earth they have to do with this case, I have no idea. All of us are outraged by it. It's not particularly noteworthy that they're also outraged by it. It's political opportunism of the most flawed kind, and it upsets me. It means that this is a party who are rudderless, who are looking for populist attention. That's all they're looking for, and that is not acceptable. That, to me, is the kind of thing we should weed out of our political system, because it speaks to the lowest hanging fruit.
And the problem with that is they think most people in the country are populist, low-hanging fruit.
Well, it tells you what they really think of us. The same way as the ANC, when Jacob Zuma talks about clever blacks, he's telling you what he really thinks of people who improve their lives without ripping government coffers to pieces for it. He's telling you that he doesn't have any appreciation for your credibility, for your productivity, and for your work ethic. He's telling you, in his mind, anything you've achieved is probably not deserved. Now, that to me is something I can't, with good conscience, go to sleep at night accepting and swallowing fully.
I mean, I've always made the argument that the three main political parties actually hate black people. The EFF does want to give them land. No, let me explain.
Okay.
EFF does want to give them land or land capacity, agency, anything like that. The state will own everything and they will decide what to do with it. If you deserve it.
That's good old socialism.
ANC, clever blacks, no title deeds. We'll give you a house. We'll still own it though.
And we'll keep the rural people in our thrall so that we can keep getting votes.
And we'll carry on feeding the grant system.
And we'll give you the grant system because then you are beholden.
Indeed. And then we'll keep the chiefs
and the DA?
In power. And the DA, after this coffin case, they think black people feel really terrible about words and about actions of two or three horribly wicked people like these two people who put that man in the coffin. Mm. And the DA rushes and says, this sort of thing is unacceptable to the ordinary black person. No. Why don't you let the ordinary black person decide?
Yeah.
If they're not up in court whatever they need to do,
I'm always very suspicious. Stay away. I'm very suspicious of anybody who claims to speak on behalf of a group of people or who claims to know something about how groupthink works.
Absolutely.
People who say, well, black people think or white people think or old people think or young people think. Yeah. I think it's what Bill Maher always calls the soft bigotry of low expectations, where you go into a situation and you go, oh, well, shame the poor Mexicans. And I'll use them as an example because South Africans can relate to that more objectively than they can white, black, rich, poor. But let's say someone in the U.S. political system decides that suddenly they're the appointed speaker on behalf of Mexicans. They haven't necessarily done any research around this. They've got anecdotal stories, people that they've met in the street and so on. That's how politicians work. They're not really interested in facts at all. And they go around then saying, well, Mexicans want X, Y, and Z, and Mexicans believe X, Y, and Z. And at the same time, they deny those people their agency by never actually asking them themselves.
Absolutely.
It's a deep-seated... If you want to talk about an idea of privilege or an idea of supremacy, it's those people who appoint themselves our representatives. I mean, what kind of an inflated sense of self-importance do you have to have to become a representative in Parliament or to go to the House of Representatives in America, the Senate, and speak on behalf of bunches of people that you actually aren't sure that you are in any way mandated or empowered to speak on behalf of. In any case, in any normal functioning Western democracy, your turnout at the polls is maybe 50, maybe 60%. So actually, it's likely that a minority, a sizable minority, or even a majority of people don't care about you. Well, at very least.
Well, here's a classic example. In 2016, 15 million people voted. 18 million who were eligible to vote did not vote.
Now, they don't care about the politicians at all. They didn't ask them to speak on their behalf.
But there's no
they're not interested.
But there's no popular mandate. That's what people don't get. So people are always about, oh, the ANC is doing this, and they won the vote by 64%. Yes, but 50% or 60% of the voters did not vote at all. So the ANC has maybe 22% of the actual vote in the country.
Now, I mean, that's like the new pass mark. It's just not good enough.
For maths,
No, it's just not good enough.
So, yeah.
Well, all right. So don't you think there's some pragmatism to it, though? So, you know, those three parties we've talked about, and I hate talking about the EFF as one of the main parties because I don't think they are.
8%.
8% in a local government election, 6% at the national level. That's what they got last time. Yeah. And we'll wait and see what they get next time.
Okay.
But you know, even if we look at them as the big three, you're going to the polls. You know, obviously we know people like Ramon won't vote, but there will be people that vote. I don't really want to get into that debate of whether we should or shouldn't. The system is such that our government works based on people going and writing an X in a box, and then that government gets voted in. So if you're going to be pragmatic, you've got to pick one of them, even if you don't like any of them really. Or you can choose not to pick one of them, but one of them's going to win. One of them's going to sit in power and going to make laws and are going to do things that affect you. So isn't at that point, don't you go, all right, well, it's the whole lesser evil argument.
Democracy is such a complicated animal. You know, it's the worst, the best of the worst systems. And part of me kind of warms to the ideas that I know Ramon stands for, anarchy, that we should actually not have any of this. At the same time, there is no other way to give people even a semblance of agency in some parts of this country and in some parts of the world, because they don't have any way of standing up for themselves. I don't know. I don't know the answer. I'm so grateful I'm not a politician, and I love being able to mock and ridicule them at every turn, because I don't come from a place where I have to offer a better answer. I don't have to solve their problems. They've decided this is the system that they're going to be a part of, and they're going to steamroll ahead, and if they screw up, I'll be the first one to tear them a new asshole. But if they do a good job, I'll also be the first one to say, well done, I didn't think you'd succeed. I don't think a lot of politicians will succeed. In fact, I reckon from the outside looking in, their success chances are very, very slim. So when they do get it right, I'm happy to give them credit. It never lasts. It never makes any difference. In the course of human history, there are winners and losers, and it all depends who writes the history.
So, Gareth, I've known you for about a year now, maybe a bit more. Have you become a lot more, maybe not disillusioned, but despondent with South Africa in general, in the sense that the institutions aren't working in terms of politically and maybe socially? Do you think we're going through a tough time, or is it just a case of a shitty president, get rid of him and a lot of issues will be solved? Because you used to be quite upbeat.
No, I'm not. I'm becoming far, I'm becoming much more cynical.
When I listen to you.
No, I'm getting older. You know, there's that old saying, I wish I could remember who said it, about... Yeah, if you're not a liberal in your 20s, you have no heart, and if you're not a conservative in your 50s, you don't have a brain.
I don't have either. Then I was never liberal, but nevertheless.
No, I think you are. I think you think to each his own, and social rules and canon law shouldn't exist.
It
and
depends
that kind
on
of
the definition of liberal. I mean, in that sense, but
you're not a leftist. But I think you're a liberal.
Oh,
like,
sure.
You're not going to walk into my house and tell me I should live my life.
I'm left of liberal. I want you to protect your heroin lab with M16.
Right. Okay.
That's an ideal society. Yeah. You could do that, but nevertheless. Right. But yes, you're becoming a bit disillusioned because you understand more of the system, or is the system just not great to begin with?
No, I the more I understand about the system, the more disillusioned I become, in effect.
Right.
And that's just, it's partly an effect of age, but it's also an effect of... You eventually just aren't taken in by the nonsense anymore. You're just not hyped up. Like, I don't get hyped up about stuff like I used to once. You know, certain things resonate with you and you go, oh, woo, hooray. I'll never join a mob. I'll never march on anything. I think that's really adolescent behavior, whether you're doing it in your teens or your 50s.
Isn't it pointless?
It's totally pointless. And it's all about being part of something. And most people just want to be a part of something because they've been raised badly. And a lot of people just didn't have enough love in their lives when they were kids. So they need to feel part of a club. They need to have a father figure. They need to have someone who they can confide in or rely on. All of this stuff that you should have got out of your system when you were still a child. And most people haven't, because they were raised badly, if at all.
Indeed.
And their parents didn't put in the work and the effort. There's a good reason... there's a good argument in my book to not have kids, because I don't believe it's going to make the world a better place, and I don't believe they should come into this world.
Well, I think it depends who has kids.
I don't think so, because then you start getting into very murky waters.
Oh, sure.
Around whether it's ethical to allow X or Y person to have kids, and it's not ethical to allow Z and A people to have kids. No.
Well,
We shouldn't ever place those kinds of restrictions on people. It's very, very touchy territory.
Well, if I had my way, if I was dictator, I would have a switch that sterilizes everyone, and then if you really want to have children, you can have one, but you have to be sure that you actually want one. It's not. I mean, 60% of people are like accidents, right? Most people are unplanned.
But here's what
and
happens.
That causes a lot
the
of,
moment you have
lot
a child.
Issues.
You have to. Societal pressure forces you to say, well, it's the best thing that's ever happened to me. No, it's the best thing that's ever happened to me. You'll never meet a parent who goes, well, this is about the fourth or fifth best thing that's ever happened.
I must introduce you to some.
Yeah, you must introduce.
No, you never have. I mean, to my experience, again, it's very anecdotal and ad hoc, but to my very limited experience, anyone I've asked about having children, they have to say, there's pressure on them to say, this is the best thing that's ever happened in my life. It's the most rewarding, wonderful, terrific experience.
Which is why all new mothers become basically wine alcoholics and post memes about it on Facebook.
Look, they're lying, but it's because of social pressure.
Yeah.
Most people are probably have had the promise of a really impressive career taken out from under them because they had kids. And again, I'm not going to judge. If people decide
choice.
To do that, that's their business. I've decided not to. I don't see how producing offspring of my own would contribute to the world being a better place.
Okay, but hold on.
I don't see how that'll happen.
You're a student of science, okay? You like science a lot. I know you specifically chemistry.
Yeah.
Obviously, you believe in evolution, for example, and
all of
these kind
of... It's not a matter of belief. If you don't believe in evolution, you're just a fool.
Absolutely, I agree. So you would acknowledge that for us to continue, for us to advance as a species, for us to continue going, we have to reproduce.
What do you care?
It's part of the
You're
process.
You're not going to be here.
So you are you completely nihilist in that sense? You would be fine if everyone, you know, that concept of women become infertile tomorrow.
My brother has two lovely children. Whatever genetic material I have, he has. Let him carry it on. I've decided that I'm going to live this life in selfish perpetuity until the day I'm taken off of it. And I will make contributions in a wider sense. I hope to leave some works which are impressive. I hope to leave some ideas out there that might stand the test of time. I hope to leave things that might last 100 years after I'm dead.
But nothing will. I mean, you realize
probably
that.
Not. But that's why you can be nihilist about it, or you can say, well, it's just practical. Because we can see that, you know, every grave stops being visited 1.5 generations after that person's dead.
Yeah, and even if you make yourself a god, even if you literally become Jesus, you know, there will be a time at which ideology will be rejected.
Once Apollo was worshipped like Jesus is now, don't think it won't happen to him.
Okay, so staying on the science sort of side of things, what are you excited about?
I'm excited about what technology gives us. I'm excited about the opportunity to live forever. Myself, not why create more of me to go on into the future and not be the same person I am. I want this consciousness to carry on for as long as possible until I've exhausted all the curiosity that is in me. And that will take more than a lifetime, because there are things that I do want to know about that I don't know anything about. And there are things that I know a little bit about that I want to know more about. And technology might make it possible for me to live a lot longer. It might enable me to, it already does, to know things and to find things out, to understand the world, the universe, the meat vehicle and everything else better than I do.
Assuming we're not in a simulation.
If we're in a simulation, that'll be exciting to discover too. It'll mess up a lot of people's ideas of what reality really is. I'm not afraid of any of that. To me, it all represents a greater understanding of who we are, where we are, what we're doing here. And that's the point, right?
Well, I don't know thyself. because I'm not afraid of any of that either, but I think that most people are. So,
what do you care about that? Since when are you someone who cares about most people?
Since when have you become a populist?
Yeah. What's this all about?
Just in terms of understanding other people and their motivations for what they believe and what they buy into. Don't you think that they don't want any complete truths, so they like being mollycoddled by religion, for example, or by a politician and their ideology, or whatever it happens to be. People are in fear of being in true control of their own lives.
Of course they are, because it's the most terrifying thing. You're in a vehicle that's traveling at thousands of kilometers an hour, effectively, through a universe that you don't know the end or the beginning of. You don't have any signposts along the way. There's nothing to guide you. And complete control is as terrifying as having no control whatsoever. But it's preferable. It's preferable only on that final 1% where I'd rather it was up to me, whether it ends badly or it ends well, than it was up to someone else. I think that's the point of being conscious, is that at some point you have agency. At some point you get to decide. You have personal accountability for how this thing results. And if it results well, that's a life well lived, and you can go to sleep and you'll feel good about it. And it won't matter once you're gone, but while you were alive, it did. And even if 90% of the time you spend trying to get to that point, if you don't get there, that's also more satisfying than having spent your life just wandering aimlessly with no purpose at all.
This is much deeper than I expected, I must be honest. Right, well, we're going to finish off in a little while. So, Gareth, I have two questions for you. I've been trying to ask you for the whole year. Number one, why the hell did you allow us in your let us have a show? And number two, 2017, what are the big plans for Cliff Central? Because without blowing smoke up your ass too much, I do think Cliff Central is going to be the most honest representation of content the country. I think it already is, but
then
you've
already answered your first question, because I want people who have different points of view. I know you guys and the Frankly Speaking people are on polar opposite ends of what you believe to be. In your case, you think that they just peddle lies, basically, and that they're all consumed by ideology.
They escaped mental asylum.
They think you two are insane right-wingers that are probably arming the next Burmach. I mean, who knows? The point is, I just love the fact that we can have these two different shows under the same roof. And I do love the fact that, like any good family, you have an aunt who you completely hate and loathe and despise, but you have a cousin who you really get along with well. You have a sibling who is the best thing ever, and you have another sibling who you just can't stand to be with for more than 5 seconds. That's a normal, healthy family. And anybody who tells you that everybody always gets along is living in cloud cuckoo land. And anybody who tells you that everyone never gets along is clearly an instigator. So somewhere in this whole picture, I would like what we're building here to become a source of education, inspiration, interest, narrow casting, niche broadcasting, the kind of thing where you can go in and find the content that really turns you on. Because it is a world of choice that we've entered into. And if you guys can provide some part of that choice, and clearly you are, then we're doing the right thing. And let this freedom of speech reign. Let's not count anything out. Let's not count out the fact that Black First, Land First won't get the kind of coverage that they will anywhere else. And maybe they deserve a show here as much as, you know, imagine the Penny Sparrow show. I mean, I don't imagine that any time in the future, right? But there should be a world where one day all points of view are taken as just points of view. And we don't get emotional upset about them because we know we can beat them with our ideas. And in the marketplace of ideas, the best one will always win. But if you're not prepared to go into that marketplace of ideas, it's probably because your ideas are cuck.
Or you don't have an open mind. I mean, that's the problem we face, is many people just
and then you can't call yourself a liberal. If you don't have an open mind, that's the starting blocks for a liberal. Open mind, right?
Yeah, and dismissing anyone you don't like with, you know, words that you either make up or derogatory.
We've got a long way to go, and there are sensitivities because people's feelings are an important part of this. For some people, it's all they've got, their feelings. They don't have anything else. So what your show is probably going to end up fighting with people about more than anything else is that because you don't give feelings the credit that they deserve in some people's minds, you're essentially invalidating them because they haven't had... They're on the Maslow's hierarchy. They're on a level where they haven't had a chance yet to interrogate things from an intellectual or factual point of view. And again, this is not me being patronizing, but I'm trying to look at it psychologically. Perhaps they're still at a point where they're too broken to be able to construct an argument. And any kind of argument from you is going to be an offense. It's going to be an attack on them, on their basic integrity. Because intellectually, they're not prepared to engage in something where they haven't yet got the weapons or where their weapons were fashioned in a different factory to yours. And in that case, I do think that there's room for a rapprochement between the two, where the left has to concede that some of the time, the reason that they're angry and they're full of feelings and emotions and righteousness is because very often they feel disabled by the tools of intellectual discourse. Because the philosophy that they've adopted from the get-go, which they either will spend their lives building upon or deconstructing, that philosophy is deeply flawed. And on the right, there are philosophies that are deeply flawed, but a lot of those have been discredited by history already, because most of history has been a fight against the right. So if you take the whole of human history, most of it is a fight against authoritarianism, is a fight against particularly the last 500 years of human history. It's been against chiefs and kings and priests and popes and rabbis and people who've told us that they come from a place of authority, essentially the right. Those people are mostly thoroughly discredited now. So it's the left's turn to break down their own philosophies, which are quite new. You know, Marx was only 200 or 300 years ago.
Not even. 180,
somewhere around like that. Yeah. The point is, those are very young philosophies. So in the scheme of things, they still have to have their own internal enlightenments.
Reformation.
And when they have those enlightenments, they'll either improve their arguments at the same time, or they will realize that the error of their ways and have to turn on other arguments, to turn in different directions philosophically.
That we shall see. All right. So when's your next gig? Sorry, we're supposed to promote his. Do you have gigs coming up as a DJ?
No, you beat the secret. I haven't done one of those for ages. I didn't think I'd do them anymore. Get out of here.
Thank you. Thank you for coming on the show. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
We're away for 3 weeks of December, so some of our best shows of the year will be replayed on Cliff Central. You can obviously download any of our podcasts either from Cliff Central or on iTunes. You can find us on Facebook. Give our page a like at Renegade_Report on Twitter. And we look forward to chatting with you and engaging with you in 2017.
So when's our first show in January? The 10th.
January the 10th.
January the 10th. We'll be back. Have a good Christmas pagan traditional holiday.
Happy holidays.
Enjoy Plett. Apparently it's nice this time of year. I wouldn't know. But nevertheless,
thanks so much.
See you all next year.
Catch you next time. Bye. CliffCentral.com.